Thank you for downloading this episode of Software Gone Wild, a podcast focused on everything software-defined. To get more episodes and explore other SDN and network automation resources, visit sdn.ipspace.net.
Since the very beginning of the saga of overlays and tunnels, some people were saying, yeah, that's cool, and so on, but you will lose visibility into the behavior of the underlying transport fabric, and that might cause problems. And as always, there is some truth in that, and that truth has been greatly exaggerated at certain points in time to suit the particular opinionated needs of whoever was saying that truth. So trying to figure out what the real truth behind the scenes is, I'll have a nice chat with Lucas Kratiger from Cisco Systems. So keep in mind, he is working for Cisco, so he has a particular bias. Welcome, Lucas.
Thank you very much, Ivan. Pleasure to be here with you.
And where does your bias come from? What are you doing at Cisco?
Oh, obviously my bias comes from all of these different overlay technologies we are providing, right, which are predominant in the industry these days. So I'm working as a principal engineer in here in technical marketing. Yes, there is a marketing, but there's also a technical piece in there.
So you're principal.
Oh, yeah, of course. Of course. That's the other leg which we have in there. And there's engineer in there as well. So we have all the facets of what we can do. I worked at Cisco for a couple of years and did a lot in the overlay space. Some of you guys might have seen one or the other piece of me somewhere.
Oh, yeah, that VXLAN guy.
Oh, yeah, exactly. That VXLAN guy. I think I have to create another meme on this one, put it somewhere out there. Yes, it's that other VXLAN guy. But he also did other things before where actually he saw also challenges, that VXLAN guy, with other overlays out there in the industry. So in the meantime, let's tackle it, right? So I had to operate networks back in the times. I had to build networks. Now I produce products and solutions around networks. So the evolvement of my journey happened. So I think also networking per se should evolve. And with this, now I have a handle on that.
Okay, so previously you were like, if only those idiots would implement this feature. And now you are in that position and you go like, if only those idiots wouldn't ask for that feature.
Exactly. While idiot is removed with dear customer.
Yeah, of course. Or bloody vendor.
Or bloody vendor, exactly. Yeah, pretty much. So, yes, of course. I mean, even today, we are doing things like testings for customers, solution testings. And from time to time, you really see that the customer has a valid point that something is not there. And we want to listen to that piece, and we want to try to understand where it comes from and change how networking is being done generally, and just, oh yeah, let's add another feature and it's done. It just overcomplicates a lot of things. And specifically in the terms of overlays, it is to a certain extent already pretty complicated when we think that we have to build two networks, the underlying transport network and the overlaying, whatever encapsulation you want to use. Yes, the VXLAN guy is here, so we talk about VXLAN there, but we need to change certain things. And I think we did and changed certain things already today.
So what were the customers telling you was missing in the overlay work?
One of the very interesting approaches was that one customer came and said, hey, I did a trace route from my host in the same subnet to another host in the same subnet. So 10.10.10 to 10.10.11. And the only thing what I saw was, oh, it goes into a star and then I have my neighboring host. I say, well, if you do a layer 2 overlay, that's the result you have. I say, well,
of course, what did you expect?
Exactly. That's how traceroute in the layer 2 network works. I say, well, that's...
I would be wondering about the star in the middle.
Yeah, the star in the middle is... I'm not wondering anymore, as we saw things where, depending on what OS to what OS you ping, you see very, very different things from time to time. But put that by side, the expectation was, how do I know where my traffic went in the underlying transport network? It's a layer 3 network. It's equal cost multipath. I have hashing of path, so I don't know.
I have no clue.
You have potentially no clue. So now you can do a clumsy way. You go to all your spine switches in that case, and you sniff the traffic, and you see certain things going. Well, that's kind of the answer which has been given to that customer from other perspectives. And
oh no, use NetFlow. all the flows.
Exactly, NetFlow with another approach. Span is another approach, as previously said. I mean, you can do so many things in order to try to catch
it. Someone told him to use span.
Yes, actually.
A terabit switch.
It was a multi-10 gig, multi-40 gig switch. Yeah. But yes, that was actually a thing. By trying to narrow down the span session or the mirroring session to be more specific to from which source switch to which destination switch. Now, if there is no other traffic, that's beautiful. But if there is a lot of flows going, this is not practical.
I just wanted to say, how can you span on the contents of the inside packet?
You can't. You actually can't. So on a spine switch, and let's open a bracket, we're talking VXLAN, and in the sense of VXLAN, the traditional spine would be an IP forwarder. So we don't have a visibility into what the encapsulation actually does. What we see is source VTAP, destination VTAP. We see a VNI, we see a source port, destination port from the L4, but we don't really have a lot of granularity there. So when we start spanning, we actually need also the payload to actually see what's in there, then respectively going
to. So you are effectively spanning all the traffic coming from source switch to the destination switch, which could be 40 gig of traffic per spine.
Beautiful approach, right?
Yeah.
I would
what
never
could
ever...
possibly go wrong?
I would never, ever, ever go down that approach. I would never tell the customer to do something like that. It kind of sparked, and I have to say, this was 3 years ago when we started to see the first VXLAN switches, hardware switches out there. Of course, in the software world, it was a little bit earlier than what we had baked in the merchant custom silicon in the industry. But at that time, telemetry or visibility was basically non-existing. We just tried to first make it work, and then we go and figure out how we operate it.
Well, let's make it work. Let's have a beer. Let's sell it. Let's walk away.
And yeah, let's always walk away. As I said, back then, we don't think it's practical. And at that present time, it was very, very early. And when you think at the use case, it's a very, very traditional operation administrator management use case, so an OAM use case, how I could potentially path from a source to a destination over an overlay network and get the path granularity of the underlying transport network with all the different bells and whistles put into the equation. Now, there are easy ways to do this, and there are complicated ways of doing this. And we started with a very, very, very simple way. And the first step was, provide me a command, which allows me to know what is my source port for my VXLAN encapsulation. You might know, you might not know, all of you out there, that in VXLAN, we use entropy based on the UDP source port. That means that port changes depending on the flows we're having, depending on the application which goes in there. And this source port, this outer UDP source port, together with the destination port, source IP, destination IP, creates the hashing for the ECMP path. So it can be very, very variable. So let's say, let's give me that command first to have that source port. And with this, at least I have already some information from where to where and what is the outer.
Okay, so you don't want to send all the traffic from one top of rack switch to another top of rack switch over one single path.
Correct.
You're using the trick where you are taking the payload and magically generate the source UDP port out of that, and then you're using 5-tuple load balancing from the leaves to the spines so that the traffic that belongs to different users but still goes between the same top of rack switches, goes over different leaf-to-spine links.
100% correct. We use the inner 5-tuples and generate a hash. This gives me the source port for the UDP source port for VXLAN.
Okay, so that was the next question. So from the original packet, you use the same 5-tuples that you would use for regular ECMP.
I would generally say that's a common practice. I would not say that this is the only approach which is being used.
You could do whatever.
You could use the bridge domain equals to the VLAN. You could add additional information in there, like whatever we can identify as a hashing criteria on the ingress packet.
As long as you don't spray the packets from the same session across multiple links, you are pretty safe.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the key criteria in there. And that's just what VXLAN has built in as allowing to achieve entropy across this equal cost multipath routed network.
Also, to be precise, this happens at the VXLAN encapsulation point.
Correct.
In your case would be the top of rack switch. And in the case of a 6-letter company, it would be the hypervisor.
In sense of network overlays, the starting point is at the top of rack switch or whatever the gateway is, which does the encapsulation, or if you want, the pushing of the additional headers. In case of host overlays or software overlays, we would have it in a virtual switch or in a software-based switch within the physical server or the hypervisor. The reason why I circulate a little bit back there is also a Cisco company out there which actually does also software overlays, meaning based on the hypervisor with what we do with VPP and virtual forwarded topology there.
And Nexus 1000V. And there's correct. Microsoft.
Of course, there's so many out there which have that capability, and we're pretty much doing the same thing from an entropy perspective in order to allow this diversity of path in the network.
And everyone is doing more or less generically the same with a little tweaks here and there.
Correct. Absolutely correct. I mean, if I have the ability to add additional flex in order to even improve the distribution of packets in the underlying network, meaning more flexible generate the source port in the VXLAN encapsulation, then I get more flexibility and better distribution of traffic.
Okay, so the first percent of the journey, you added the command that where you can specify the source, destination, IP, and port, and yada yada, and it would tell you what UDP port that would be.
That's just the first thing which we started doing as, let's call it, a version 0.1 or
0.01
to at least be able to have that hashing being visible. When you think, if you want to do that otherwise, you have to first understand what is the respective hashing you're able to use in the routed network. So what are the respective fields and how the buckets are for the distribution. That's the underlying network. And then you have to understand how you do from the original packet, how you calculate respectively that hash model in order to get that port. So you had to do a lot of math. And I actually worked there with some engineers and said, I want to get it in a spreadsheet so I can calculate my source port before you guys give me actually the command to have it in the switch implemented. And it was practical to have that spreadsheet with all these formulas and thing, but why should I deliver a customer spreadsheet which works exactly in this circumstance, because depending on platform and so on and so forth, when we can implement it in our operating system, in that case it was NXOS on our Nexuses, and give them within all the permutation of platform and capabilities already the right port. So that's what we did as a first action there. And a little open bracket there, it did not only generate the port, it actually also checked the availability or the reachability in that case of the neighboring device. So I was able to execute ICMP ping on the switch as it would come from a host behind that switch to a destination virtual machine.
So you were pinging the destination virtual machine from the switch, faking the source IP address of another virtual machine.
Correct. Faking, mimic, imposing.
Yeah,
whatever. You choose the terminology in there, but yes, that was the first step we did.
Impersonating.
Impersonate is actually a very good word. Proxy with another word there. Yes. So the aim was to understand from the switch side, is a remote host a node? Now, I can go and say, I know exactly behind which VTAP it is, or I can say, I don't know behind which VTAP. And that's the additional mutation we added actually in there. We said, we don't know where that host is. So we assume we haven't sent an ARP to that host. We don't know about anything very actually is behind which VTAP. So assume there is an empty MAC table in that case. And so we did actually also implement that piece and say the VTAP is unknown. But we know the payload. It's this source IP, source MAC, destination IP, destination MAC. Even the protocols and even the ports of that protocol, which are relevant for creating the hashing port, that source port in the outer encapsulation. So we put all of this in there. So we had the first step done, reachability, port identification. And it was an eye-opener that we were able to do that and have that ability to bridge traffic and be pinged and we know exactly how it's being encapsulated.
So you don't do trace route, really? You just give me enough information so that I can go and look into the Ceph table on the switches on the path to figure out where the packet is really going.
So that was version 001, and we talked quite some extensively on 001 because 001 is the base. It's, you have to do some groundwork, and Actually, there is, same as the NVE ping, we call them the Network Virtualization Edge ping on the platforms, and we actually added NVE Traceroute, which is also ICMP-based, as the previous one, the ping, was also ICMP-based. And there we did actually a mapping from the overlay path to the underlay path.
Under certain conditions, you copy TTL from the overlay packet into the underlay packet, even though at the same time you're pretending you're doing bridging.
Correct. So what we pretty much did is we use TTL, and if the TTL expires, the switch in transit is required to respond this on the receiver side, or what we call the ingress VTEP, where we start the encapsulation. We are taking this information and actually path plots where we actually going. And that was version 0.1, if you want. So where we evolved from just doing a reachability check with getting the port to exact mapping of the path, which is still not enough.
Well, it's still proxying, right? You still have to do that from the top of rack switch.
It is still from the top of rack switch. That's correct.
You haven't allocated a UDP port for that so that you could ping over UDP from the end host and get traceroute on the end host.
Well, we have to open a little bit the capabilities and the opportunity to do more. And we actually did more, mm-hmm. but going very, very shortly back to the ping and to the traceroute, it's not only about the path, about the single path. It's actually also about all the path. Let's think about MTU mismatch in a network. How are you going to figure that out? Oh, I pinged in the overlay from source to destination. I set MTU to, let's say, 9000, and everything was okay. And then my single path...
Not my problem.
problem, right? And then my single path failed, which I actually used because of ICMP is a very distinct pattern and it created always the same source port, so hashing wasn't really there. I failed over and I forgot on one port to set the MTU large enough.
So you had the same problem that Peter Labuco had at Facebook, where he had to spray all the links in his gigantic leaf and spine fabric to ensure that all the links between certain leaf and the other leaf are okay.
Exactly. Now we can do that in a brute force kind of way, or we can do that in a more surgical way, as we exactly did actually this. And we used in a two-tier topology where the leafs are my sources, where I have my host behind and the single layer of spine, I can predict pretty much what is the path, as there is only variable in the game, which is my spine, which I actually hit. And the definition of which spine I'm actually using is defined by the physical port the ingress switch is connected to the spine switch. Now, even if I have 4 spines, 8 spines, or how many I have, in the trace route as well as in that NV ping mode, I have the option to give a single egress port, or I have the option to give a list of egress ports. Now, port equals the physical interface, so I want to be very specific there. So I can create a sweep or MTU check, for example, where I say I issue a ping, I impersonate it from this given host, which is behind me, and it could be any host, by the way. I don't know where it is, and I want to use all 4 links which are going to the spine.
So you're bypassing the ECMP table and you're sending the same probe over multiple links at the same time.
Yes and no. I'm calculating actually the source port respectively to
What would the source port have to be so that I would just by accident hit this particular uplink?
It's funny that you say by accident because there is actually the approach for VXLAN OEM in the ICMP and in the traceroute. It's actually described by some industry vendor out there that they're using this brute force approach, like, as you said, by Petter, or they're doing this guessing. But that was the reason why we first implemented the port calculation. With this, we not only can calculate forward, we also can calculate backward, meaning which ports match on which egressing interface, and this gives us a predictability which we can also expose to a controller system, so we don't have to let the switch do only the stuff. We actually can also hand it over to a controller and let the controller certain things there.
Controller would be ACI controller.
ACI would be an opportunity there. ACI does a little bit different OEM in a more integrated way. We have a tremendous amount of visibility in there of path and flows and how hosts communicate. I'm going back to the more standalone approach where I say, let's say the controller is my network manager, and what we did is we did a simple Python web server scripty kind of thing and actually did what we call an out-of-band OAM approach, where the controller generates the OAM packets, sends it into the switch, and the switch distributes it. And the response goes back to the controller plots the path. It's a science fair project.
The controller is using a REST API to request the switch to send a proxy packet?
Actually not. It's actually the controller generates OAM packets.
Mm-hmm.
So you are required to allow the controller to do that work. Mm-hmm. It's not just happens by accident. So there is a way that we can generate packets from the controller towards the switch, whatever ingress switch it is. Front panel ports, obviously, access is required in that. And then also allow that the response goes to the controller back. We also have the option of what you just said, where we generate the packets over an API on the switch, in that case, NX API, and say, yeah, actually respond the packet to me, meaning me, the controller, rather than sending it to the switch to evaluate the information there.
That was my next question. So you can get access to this functionality over the API.
That's correct. So NX API has not only the execution of the commands, also the operational data. We discussed before the trace route.
Oh, yeah, that's true. The moment you have the command and the moment it can return data in JSON format, you're done.
Exactly. And we are able to do that. And we actually also store a certain amount of data on the switch in a text kind of format within the switch itself. It's a little DB which stores, like, I guess, a couple of hours of executed OEM requests for history purposes.
So you have the NVE ping, have the NVE traceroute.
Yes.
And both are accessible over API, so the controller can do that.
Correct.
And you have a history of all the requests. So if paths have changed and the controller is constantly pinging something,
we can know about that immediately.
You can actually go into the history and say, like, oh, 3 hours ago, the link went down. No wonder Exchange is slow.
Correct. We could do that. Now, we haven't talked about version 1.0, which we actually shipped today, because 0.0.1 was the ping, 0.1 was the trace route. But we actually have something what we call path trace, which is using additional OEM functions which are defined in the NV03 fault management draft after TISA,
mm-hmm.
which is commonly called the TISA ping or the TISA trace route.
TISA stands for?
TISSA. It's the name of the person which actually submitted that piece in there.
Yeah.
We're actually doing, in addition to the ISMP-based one, also the TISA one. And the TISA one is specifically very, very interesting, as we get much more channels between an ingress switch and an egress switch to transport data. And also, if the intermediate switches are capable of evaluating the TISA format, in that case, we're also able to get intermediate hop information. Now, that sounds very, why do I need it? What's the case behind that? We talked about the ISMP, and we talked about the trace route, which we also use in the ISMP. It gives me a path, or it gives me multiple paths. With TISA, I actually get next to the path, which is, again, very, very payload related. So how an original packet could look at the respective hashing path and also the status on an interface per interface space. So when I execute either through a controller, through a script, through the API, or through the CLI, I can give you on all the interfaces and a path for a respective application path trace all the interface statistics.
Ah, okay. So it's reading SNMP counters while it's passing through the switch.
It's not reading SNMP counters, but yes, it reads out the respective components of the switch. We decided to do mainly load and errors, as this is one of the interesting things. And at the present time, we are doing this, like the ping and the trace route, in a reactive way. So it's done on the switch side as an executable command, which is mostly used for troubleshooting. But there is, and that would be the phase 2.0, what we call proactive, where we use a very, very lightweight way of collecting these information in a certain interval, store these information, and then expose them as either an aggregated or an individual information to a controller to exactly understand what you just said previously, meaning, oh, 2 hours ago there was a change in path, and that's why something is going to be slow, or we had a bad optic somewhere, so that's why we have increased errors on one of the links, etc., what you could think of.
Okay. So to recap, this guy wrote IETF draft, where he specified a different packet format for ping and traceroute. So it's no longer ICMP-based, it's probably UDP-based.
Actually, no. It's not even this. It's actually more interesting. We're changing on the encapsulation side to understand that is a respective TISA packet. So the inner will look like every other TCP or UDP traffic you could generate. So we generate a payload-less proper header. That's the first piece of what we're doing on the ingress side. We encapsulated in VXLAN, but we're having our nerd knob so that when that packet goes along the path, we can identify it and respectively get the hop-by-hop information which are relevant in order to do the telemetry information or the OEM information, get the fault management information out.
So you're using different encapsulation for...
Now we're using the VXLAN encapsulation. Actually.
With additional bits set in the VXLAN header.
With the specifically defined fault management bits, which are being intended based on that TISA draft. Yes, that's
so
correct.
It's like the router alert bit in the IP packet.
We could think of kind of these things, yes.
So this packet has special bit set, which means, oh, take a look at it.
Correct.
Sign it so we know it passed you. And send information back.
Because we want to have hop-by-hop information, right? It's not just ingress to egress. We want to have all of these intermediate hops.
With this approach, you can do trace route without tweaking TTLs.
Exactly. That's exactly what this fault management approach for NVO3 does. NVO3 is part of that IETF group or working group that works on the VXLAN piece. That's the intention. Yes, that's exactly the intention in there.
With that one, you just send a single packet. Or you send multiple packets to spray up all the uplinks?
I could. I could do both. I can use a single packet when I want to have a specific path. I can even generate a range of ports, either an egress port or even an external UDP source port. So I do the hashing for the network. And then obviously comes the complexity if third tier in the network comes in, speaking leaf spine, that's easy because we know exactly from an egress interface what is the spine we are going to hit. But if you have a super spine which interconnects two kind of leaf spine networks, then as the challenge Petter had on his multi-tier spine infrastructure, it becomes very, very interesting how to do these path traces and how to spread these path traces in the exact right amount from the leaf level to the first spine, then from the first spine to the second spine up there.
So the real question is, how do you get the most information with the least amount of packets?
That's the prime objective of VXLAN OEM, what we're currently doing. That's the goal to do. And we are actually blessed or very graceful that we were able to do all of these things, as just said, from just a ping, which gives me a port and some reachability, to a very, very granular information base out of a path trace. And you will see a lot of things upcoming paired with this groundwork we did in the OEM space for overlay.
And you start saving the amount of packets just by using one packet instead of three or four probes to find the path.
Exactly.
A special bit is set by the top of rack switch, which is already in the same trust domain as the rest of the fabric. So this is not a denial of service vector.
Correct. Exactly. So first of all, the switch, which is intermediate, needs to understand this bit and needs to respond accordingly. The bit is not just magically intended or invented by us. It's really following the respective OEM bits, which have been defined as part of the IETF draft. And yes, it's in the trusted network domain from leaf to spine to super spine back down to the leaf. And it's also, if wished, uses the respective control planes in order to find behind which VTAP a certain host is. As we learned in the world of virtual machine mobility, a VM is today
move.
Here. Oh, yeah, they move. I heard of that. Just by accident saw that recently. And yes, so today it's my host, which I want to verify is behind VTAP 10, and tomorrow it's behind VTAP 12. And I don't want to statically say, always go to that VTAP 10 and check it. I want to have it following the respective forwarding plane, which is there, the control plane on top of it.
And we do have to mention, just for completeness, that this reports that the intermediate switches sent back, they have to be generated by the CPU.
Yes.
So as the packet goes through, at least an alert has to be punted to the CPU.
Yes. So there is certain capability which the ASIC provides in there, but there is the generation of a packet. It's normally being done by the CPU itself. As, for example, a BFT packet would be, or an OSPF packet. So it's on the amount of packets you generate. The reason why I said before there is a version 2.0 or a second phase where we are approaching to, the current primary phase we did was we want to do a troubleshooting approach. We want to give you a reactive tool where you can go to the switch and execute and figure out what is actually going. You can script it over the APIs, but on the end, the controller has to do the recurring calls. So we don't have a scheduler right now inside, which you want to use to execute these commands, which are, I would say, today, they're a little bit heavier than a normal ping would be, but way, way, way less than when we would continuously use IPSLA or something like that on the CPU itself. The phase two will actually bring me even more lightweight approach, where we are offloading from the control plane CPU to the ASIC to generate the packets, just to generate the packets in the right format. And that's on the ingress and the egress side to do a more proactive approach. So think of what IPSLA did on a pure CPU base, what BFD did on a link by link. We want to go somewhere in between these two things and provide the lightweight approach or proactive monitoring of an overlay network.
Yeah, but even though you would generate the probes in the ASICs, the intermediate switches would still burn CPU cycles responding to the probes.
That's correct. If we want to get the intermediate information, yes. And that's where some of the ideas we are having coming in, which you will see probably in the next, I would say, probably next 3 to 6 months, where we bring in that proactive approach and where we understand how to offload information of letting always the intermediate nodes requiring to respond to you, but keeping the granularity.
So you will do some magic tricks and we'll talk about them as you launch them.
Yes, we will do some magic tricks. I keep that for me right now.
Of course.
But for me, it's very exciting to see from where we started and where we are today. We're shipping OEM on the 9K ever since the i5 release, which is just released a couple of weeks ago.
It was launched in autumn 2016.
Autumn 2016. Yeah, that's accurate. I think that's
just for people who will listen to this in 2025.
Yes, it was autumn 2016. That's very good. 2020 we aim for first, right? Yes, 2016. And yes, there will be subsequent phases we're going into. And we have, based on what we showed to the customer in that first shipping approach, we got so much feedback on what could be interesting. And most of the applicability of these interesting things are already prepared with the groundwork, which just takes either an external controller or a little software application on top of the switch itself. And when we look what we did with the OpenNX OS approach, where third-party applications can be installed on top of the Nexus 9 case, we could do theoretically already a lot of things to script, execute, evaluate, and then export in a nice fashion.
Oh, so you'll just tell the customers, here's the infrastructure. You can deploy your container. Go have fun.
Well, we actually did that for quite some time now. That's absolutely correct. So we have the OpenNX OS initiative is actually providing you a Linux-based either bash access or guest shell access on top of the switch. There is protection, of course, within there to not oversaturate the CPU to affect the forwarding system itself. But in the overall essence, the applicability of having a third-party application on top of the switch is already very well accepted and present in our switches for quite some time now.
You said this shipped on the 9,000 switches in autumn.
Yes.
What about the other switches that also support VXLAN?
That's a very good question. So we actually did the prototype in February this year on top of the Nexus 5600. So yes, that's shipping as well. We did it on the Nexus 7000 as well. So on the Nexus switch, that's implemented and available in there for as you said, the autumn 2016 timeframe in there, yes, you will be able to use that across there.
Ah, so it's available across all the platforms?
Yes.
Well, as the releases come out?
No, actually, it's shipping today. You okay. will find NXOS release for 9K. You will see an NXOS release for 7K. You will also find an NXOS release for the 5K, specifically the 5600 mm-hmm. there. So there's not to be weighed on, as we are not going back in time. We're only going forward. So you guys all have the release on CCO for autumn 2016 already for quite some time.
And phase two?
Yes. So phase two is to be defined. We're working hardly on implementing these pieces. The designs are laid out. We presented some of the parts already to a certain set of customers. We're revalidating. We call that co-development. It's wrong. It's a bad approach. But we try to get more customer experience who already operate large-scale networks, either LA3 fabric, which is pure routing, or an overlay fabric, to see how they bring in assurance management monitoring into these networks to learn from them. And it's very exciting to see this from such customer, getting the feedback and then validating the use cases against us. Stay tuned.
So short answer, trust me, it's roadmapped.
Trust me, it's roadmapped.
Thank you, Lucas, for this update.
Of course, a pleasure.
If people want to know more about this functionality, can you point them to some resources?
Yes, absolutely. It's a good idea to go out and read an IETF draft, only if you're tired and are in a plane. There is the NVO3 fault management FM TISA draft, which is pretty exciting. We have actually the configuration guide for VXLAN as being extended to use case based. So we changed from just enable that feature and do it to look, that's the use case and that's how you can use it. So in the configuration guide, we have actually this explanation. Yes, we're changing documentation. We're doing quite
exciting things. That's a new one.
Yes, that's a good one. So I will give that link to the recording so you can have a look at the use cases. We looked at the commands relatively to it. And then I guess Cisco Live Berlin 2017, I guess we will talk about everything up to phase one in at least one or two sessions there, according to VXLAN, of course. Watch out for me, so I will give you
which
guys a
also
talk.
Answers the question, if they want to meet you, they should go to Berlin.
Cisco Live Berlin 2017 is definitely a great place to meet. There will be other opportunities as well, but definitely, yes, I will be there.
If they want to follow you on Twitter or any other social media, how do they do that?
LinkedIn. I'm in LinkedIn, so try to find me. Lucas Gradiger with a K and double T is the name. And then for Twitter, it's at CCIE21921. And no, I'm not suspended.
Thank you, Lucas, for this short update.
Pleasure, Evan.
Whenever phase two is shipping, let me know and we'll do another podcast.
Of course. Very excited to do that.
And you've been listening to Software Gone Wild. And if you want to follow me, go to Twitter and follow at iOS Hints, or even better, go to blog.ipspace.net and read my ramblings. Thanks again, Lucas. It's been a real pleasure.
Thanks, Evan, for having me. Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Software Gone Wild. If you want to learn more about software-defined networking, network automation, and related topics, visit sdn.ipspace.net and explore our courses, books, webinars, and podcasts.